WMFO, Medford. Good morning. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there's no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. This morning, I'm starting off a little earlier. An hour earlier, because I can't stand automation. I'm going to play one that was considered part of the adult westerns, as in not like the Lone Ranger, Bing Crosby, the adult westerns. Gunsmoke comes to mind, Fort Laramie, Frontier Gentleman, and of course the Six Shooter were all considered adult westerns. Most of them aired in the 1950s, kind of the climax of radio, the radio dramas. And this is one I've considered for a while. It's called Luke Slaughter, Tombstone. This is called Duo on the Trail, with an original air date of the 23rd of February, 1958, starring Sam Buffington as Luke Slaughter. It aired on CBS at 2:05 p.m. Thanks.
Slaughter's my name. Luke Slaughter. Cattle's my business. It's a tough business. It's a big business. I got a big stake in it. And there's no man west of the Rio Grande big enough to take it from me.
Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. Luke Slaughter of Tombstone, Civil War cavalryman turned Arizona cattleman. Across the territory from Yuma to Fort Defiance, from Flagstaff to the Huachucas, and below the border through Chihuahua and Sonora, his name was respected, or feared, depending on which side of the law you were on. Man of vision, man of legend, Luke Slaughter of Tombstone.
It was a long, hot ride to Laredo. The last day I pushed it hard, eating dust all the way. I didn't know if I'd be in time or not. But when I rode up to the cantina in town and went inside, I saw I was. Barely in time. The two of them were sitting at a corner table. From the sound of it, the deal was just about closed.
Me and my boys will bring that herd up across the border for you in good shape.
Hell, I hope so, Hancock. The association's pretty worried about all the trouble we've had on these drives before.
Excuse me, gents. You Ben Wilkins?
Why, yes.
President of the Cattlemen's Association?
Yes, that's right. I don't think I know you.
Look, mister, we're talking business.
That's why I'm here, Hancock.
How come you know my name?
Wilkins, I understand you're aiming to bring a herd of cattle up from Mexico into Texas.
What's that to you?
You're missing a good bet. Why don't you drive them west, to Arizona?
Arizona?
That's right. Haven't you heard about the new mines opening up around Tombstone? Everybody and his brother's headed out there, and they all gotta eat. That means a good market for beef. A lot better price than you get around here.
He's crazy, Wilkins. That's too far to drive a herd.
Hell, it's sure too dangerous anyway. Why, there's banditos, rustlers, even Indians, maybe.
I took a herd out there last month. There wasn't near enough to take care of all those beef-eating miners. I'll drive your herd out there for you, for a percentage.
Now, you just shut that big mouth of yours, mister, whoever you are. I'm the one drives Wilkins' herds, wherever they go.
Oh. Wilkins, you can't afford Jess Hancock anymore.
No,
what do you mean?
The last herd he brought across the border for you. How many did he lose along the way?
Why, 43 head.
Could have happened to anyone. Banditos, that's what it was.
Mexican bandits, huh? Here's a bill of sale might interest you, Wilkins. Seems last week a rancher named Hollister bought 43 head in good faith. Paid for him proper. Man who sold them was Jess Hancock.
What?
That's a lie.
Take a look, Wilkins. That Hancock signature.
Why? It sure is.
Nobody's gonna accuse me of wrestling.
Don't try it, Hancock. I can kick that gun out of your hand before you get it loose from the holster.
You just try it, Mitch.
You convinced, Hancock?
Who are you, mister?
Slaughter. Luke Slaughter.
Slaughter? Oh, I've heard of you, Mr. Slaughter, but I didn't know you was in these parts.
You don't have to mister me, Wilkins. Just Slaughter's good enough.
Hancock, the association's going to hear about this. If those are the same 43...
You men, got no proof.
We'll see about that. Slaughter, you said Arizona, huh?
A lot of hungry miners in Tombstone.
Bigger price, huh?
Half again as much.
Meet me back here in an hour. You got yourself a job.
I'll be here, Wilkins.
You hear me, Slaughter. I don't care what your reputation is. You ain't gonna beat me out of this. I'll stop you.
Here I am, Hancock. And now's as good a time as any. Go ahead.
Yeah, you can talk mighty tall with my gun laying there on the floor.
Oh, yeah. Your gun. There it is, Hancock. And I'm just as far from that table it's sitting on as you are. Now go ahead.
There's other ways, Slaughter. There's other ways.
Alex Slaughter, when you signed for this job, you guaranteed me 6 good trail hands. I didn't know you were just going to pick them cold out of the bar here.
That's the difference, Wilkins. If they're not good hands now, they will be by the time we get to Tombstone. I'll see to that.
Yeah, I guess you will. How many you got so far?
2 Mexican boys who know the country pretty well, and a cook.
It still leaves you 3 shy.
I'll get them.
Say, mister, your name's Slaughter?
Yeah.
Mine's Rusty. I hear you're looking for trail hands.
Maybe. You ever been to Tombstone?
Not with a herd. Didn't know anybody had.
This'll be the second.
I've been almost every place else you can take a herd, I guess. Dodge City, Cheyenne, the Panhandle, you name it.
All right, I'll take you.
You the one that's hiring, mister?
That's right. But you look a little old for the drive I've got in mind. Tombstone's a long way.
Don't worry about that, none. I'll keep up.
What's your name?
They call me Wichita.
All right, Wichita, you're on.
Got room for one more, Slaughter?
Who are you, son?
Name's Carson. Jim Carson.
You ever ridden trail before?
No, but I don't figure it'd be too tough. Besides, Slaughter, I come in handy when there's trouble.
Oh? How about when there's work?
I'll work. I need the money. I want to buy me a gun.
You already got a gun.
I want to get me another one.
All right, I'll put you on. You say your name was Jimmy?
It's not Jimmy, it's Jim. I don't like being called Jimmy.
Go get your stuff together, Jimmy.
I guess you didn't hear me, Slaughter. I said I don't like being
you
called
You want to come along or don't you?
I want to come.
Then get moving, Jimmy.
I don't like that one, Slaughter. He's on the prod.
Could be, Wilkins.
Why take a chance with him, then? I don't want any trouble with this herd.
Now, just a minute, Wilkins. I didn't guarantee no trouble. Matter of fact, I'd be surprised if there wasn't. I guarantee just one thing, to bring that herd through. That you can count on.
Oh, I've seen young punks like him before, Slaughter. They go around with a chip on their shoulder trying to show how tough they are. He probably heard about you.
What about me, Wichita?
Well, no offense. You've got a kind of reputation, that's all. punk like that, sooner or later, he'll probably want to find out how tough you are.
Maybe.
I heard him shooting off his mouth at the bar earlier about how he'd gunned down a couple of men here and there.
Oh?
I bet he's awful green on the trail, though.
You can show him the ropes, Rusty. Maybe the trail will take some of the toughness out of him. Anyway, I need what men we can get. He goes with us.
You're the boss. Where are we heading from here?
Delgada, a little town below the border. That's where we pick up the herd.
When are we leaving?
Soon as we saddle up.
Tonight?
Yeah, we should be able to hit the trail with the cattle tomorrow afternoon. Make a few miles toward Tombstone before dark.
Well, what's the hurry?
There's a man named Jess Hancock wouldn't mind making a little trouble for me. I want that herd all in one piece. To start with, anyway.
Pretty good-looking herd, Rusty.
Yeah, but no herd's worth pounding leather like we did all the way down here to Delgada.
Slaughter said he wanted to make it by this afternoon. He did.
Where is he, anyway?
Signing the papers over there at the pens.
I don't see why we can't hang around town tonight, leave in the morning.
Well, why not take it up with the boss? Here he comes.
You think you're pretty funny, don't you, Wichita?
Just once in a while, son.
Well, I guess we're all ready. Rusty, how about the cook?
Oh, he's got all the grub loaded in the chuck wagon, ready to roll.
Good.
Senor? Senor?
What?
You are Slaughter?
Yeah, who are you?
I'm Carlota. You are going to Arizona?
Yeah, Tombstone. Why?
Take me with you.
What?
I want to get away from this place. I want to go to Arizona. Please take me with you.
Sorry.
What are you doing here, Carlotta? Come on, back to the cantina where you belong.
Well, well, Jess Hancock. How come you're down here?
This is my stamping ground, Slaughter. Or was. I ain't forgot.
I didn't figure you had.
First you take my job, now you try to take my girl.
Now, just a minute, Hancock. Don't get things any more twisted up than you can help.
Get moving, Carlotta.
You leave me alone. Get out!
I hope you have a real pleasant trip to Tombstone, Slaughter.
I better have.
Getting pretty dark, Slaughter. Don't you reckon we'd better get that herd bedded down for the night?
A little further.
You've been avoiding the regular trail. Expecting trouble?
I usually do, Wichita.
I've been watching you around horses, Slaughter. Been thinking you was in the cavalry.
Oh?
I heard about a man named Slaughter once. Commanded a regiment from Illinois in the war.
Yeah?
Raiders, they was. Used to raid across the line. This Slaughter I heard about, he always used to come back leading a string of Confederate horses with their saddles empty. I've been thinking you're the same Slaughter.
And I've been thinking you're a pretty nosy old man.
Yep, that's me.
Well, this is far enough. Rusty, we'll bed down here.
Right.
Where'd you tie that chuck wagon of ours? I just saw the tarp move. There's somebody inside.
Yeah, I saw it too.
All right, Carlotta. Get out of there.
Please, senor, I want to go to Tombstone.
You picked the wrong way.
But you don't send him back now. It's night, it's wild country. You wouldn't do that, would you?
You counted on that, didn't you? All right, you'll go with us.
Oh, gracias.
But you'll earn your way. You'll help the cook, you'll clean up after him, you'll wash the dishes.
Work me like a horse, huh? Or worse. Maybe you like the horses better.
There's one big difference. I invited the horses. After we bedded down the herd, the cook wrestled up some grub. Carlotta was plenty sullen, but she worked. Jimmy kept eyeing her, so I figured I'd better put him on night herd. I turned in around midnight. Everything was peaceful. But it didn't stay that way very long.
Slaughter! You hear that?
Yeah. Where'd they come from?
Well, I don't know. But it's got the herd riled up. There they go. They're stampeding, Slaughter. They're stampeding!
In a moment, Luke Slaughter of Tombstone returns. Somebody ought to set Jack Benny straight about how to make a movie, because he's at it again. When you join him later on today, CBS Radio's misguided matinee idol will attempt his own version of a famous movie. To make it even better, Hollywood producer Stanley Kramer, who made the movie, will be right there when he does. For a hilarious example of how not to make a motion picture, hear The Jack Benny Show later today on most of these same stations. Henry Morgan and Mitch Miller will be around following Jack Benny. Henry Morgan is host on the fast and funny guessing game, Says Who. His star-studded panel of experts spark one laugh after another as they try to identify memory-teasing mystery voices. And speaking of stars, you'll find an hour of fast and funny conversation with the biggest name stars of Hollywood and Broadway waiting for you on CBS Radio's Mitch Miller Show tonight. And now, Act Two of William N. Robeson's production of Luke Slaughter of Tombstone.
That was close, Wichita.
Yeah. I thought I'd seen everything, Slaughter. But I guess I was wrong.
What do you mean?
Riding into that herd the way you did.
You know a better way to turn them?
You could have been run down, killed.
Maybe. Jimmy, come on over here.
Look. Look, Slaughter, up on the ridge.
Small fire.
Could be Indians.
We'll go up and take a look in a minute.
What do you want, Slaughter?
Those two shots that started the stampede. Sounded like they came from over near where you were. You fire those shots, Jimmy? I said, did you fire those shots?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I thought I saw something moving in the dark near me. Figured it could be trouble.
So you just hauled up and blasted away, huh? Pretty spooky with that six gun of yours, aren't you?
I tell you, I thought someone was coming at me.
You almost cost us the whole herd. You want two of those guns, but one's too much for you. I'm taking your six gun, Jimmy.
No, you ain't, Slaughter.
I'll leave you your rifle in case you run into trouble on the way to Tombstone. But I can't take any more chances on that itchy trigger finger of yours. Now hand it over.
Ain't nobody gonna take my gun away from me. I'll draw on you before I let you.
No, you won't.
Maybe you ain't heard about them two men I gunned, Slaughter.
Yeah, you were shooting off your mouth about it in the saloon, but I don't believe it, Jimmy. You never gunned a man. And you're not going to start now. Now hand it over. But first. Let's have it. All right. Now get back to the herd.
You've taken a lot away from that kid, Slaughter. First calling him Jimmy, and now taking his gun.
I had no choice.
Even so, you cut him up, and he won't forget it.
You trying to be my conscience or something, Wichita?
Oh, like you say, I'm just a nosy old man.
Then let's go nose around that fire up on the ridge. Throw some dirt on that fire, Wichita. Yeah. Get it out.
All right. Nobody around here, you know. This could be a signal fire. Think it was Indians at Lidditch?
I doubt it. I think it was intended as a signal for Jess Hancock, so we could locate the herd.
You suggesting somebody in our outfit set off the fire?
Could be.
But the stampede, we was all there.
Fire could have been lit just before the stampede.
You say somebody in the outfit, that'd include me?
Yeah. Right now, Wichita, there's only one person in the outfit I'm sure of.
Who's that?
Me.
I tell you, I didn't start the fire, Slaughter. I wouldn't help Hancock. I told you I want to get away from him.
I know that's what you told me, Carlotta.
But you don't believe me. You think I'm still Hancock's girl. Why don't you trust me? Why don't you be nice to me, huh? Maybe I could be your muchacha.
Sorry. Right now my job's riding herd on cattle, not women.
Oh, would you make me sick? You don't care about nobody but yourself.
Is she right, Slaughter?
What? Oh, Wichita. I might have known you'd be listening.
Yep.
Well, Slaughter, the herd's quieted down. Two Mexican boys are keeping an eye on it. Did Carlotta admit anything?
No.
I wouldn't trust her any.
I don't, Rusty.
You want us for anything more, or can we turn in?
In a minute. I want to lay out the plans for tomorrow. I think we're in for some trouble.
How so?
We've got two possible routes through the country ahead, Rusty. Through a narrow pass or along the river bottom. The question is, which way to take the herd?
You expecting to be dry gulched?
I wouldn't be surprised, Jimmy.
Yeah, that narrow pass would be the logical place for a bushwhacking. Why not take the herd through along the river bottom?
Well, there's one thing wrong with that, Rusty.
It could be just what Hancock wants you to do.
Right. He might be trying to outfigure me. A lot of willows and underbrush along that river bottom. You could be holed up there. That's why we're going to take the herd through the pass. We'll start right after sunup. I didn't know if my bluff would work or not. It was the only way I could find out who Hancock's spy was. I rode away from camp toward the herd. Whoever it was, I had to give him a chance to make a move. And it didn't take long. Pretty soon I heard muffled hooves moving away. I rode back to camp and took a look. It was Rusty. He was gone.
Carlotta's gone too, Slaughter.
I guess she wasn't so anxious to get away from Hancock as she let on.
So Rusty's gone to tell him that we're bringing the herd through the pass.
It's just what I wanted him to do. Unless he knows this country a lot better than I do, he's going to lead me right to Hancock.
You're going after him?
Yeah. They should give me the slip. We're going to be in for some trouble.
What do you want us to do?
Split the outfit in two, Wichita. Take half the herd through the pass, the other half through the river bottom. Be ready for trouble, especially in the pass.
Let me take the pass, Slaughter.
You sure you want to?
Yeah, real sure. And I think I can handle it.
I think you can, too. Oh, and, you might be needing that six gun of yours. Here it is. Jim.
Thanks. Luke?
Slaughter will do. Get moving at sunup. Join up on the other side and wait for me. I picked up Rusty's trail. He was headed for the ridge between the pass and the river bottom. It was getting light when I reached a shortcut where I could gain some ground on him. But I gained too much. Just as I got back to the trail again, a horse came pounding around the bend carrying Rusty and Carlotta. He pulled up when he spotted me and shoved Carlotta off.
Get off!
Then I saw he'd been holding a gun on her. His slug burned my shirt as I dove at him.
Slaughter, you...
You all right, Carlotta?
See, I think so. Rusty made me go with him. He was taking me back to Hancock. Slaughter!
It came from those rocks up above there. Take cover.
All right. Oh, I can't walk. My ankle is twisted.
All right. All right. I'll carry you. Get her on behind this rock. You'll be all right. There. Sit here. You'll be safe now.
I was wrong about you, Slaughter.
What do you mean?
You do care about somebody beside yourself. Gracias.
It's got to be Hancock up there in those rocks. Here, take my rifle and stay put. I'm going to try and circle around behind him. There was a big shoulder of rock above me and to my left. If I could get around that, I might be able to get behind Hancock if he didn't hear me coming. There he was, 20 yards away, his back to me, his gun in the holster so he could get a better handhold as he edged his way along the rocks. I holstered my own gun and stepped out into the clear.
Hancock!
Slaughter.
Yeah. Here I am, Hancock. Now go ahead. Draw.
like it, Wichita. Slaughter should have been here by now.
He'll be along, Jim.
Well, maybe we ought to head up there and see if we can find him. He could be in trouble.
He said wait for him here.
Well, even so, maybe...
Here he is, coming up the draw. Carlotta's with him. Ain't that Rusty's horse that she's riding?
Yeah. And Slaughter's leading another one.
Uh-huh. With an empty saddle.
Turn all right?
Yeah, all in one piece. No trouble. But looks like you had some.
A little.
That horse you're leading, is it Hancock's?
It was.
I knew you could outdraw him.
Matter of fact, the draw was about even.
But how come you...
Jim, you got a couple of things to learn. It isn't getting your gun out of your holster that's the most important thing. It's what you do with it once it's out.
You figure Hancock was after the herd or after Carlotta?
I didn't take time to ask him, Wichita.
Luke Slaughter of Tombstone, starring Sam Buffington. Written by Robert Stanley, with editorial supervision by Tom Hanley, and directed by William N. Robeson. Supporting Mr. Buffington in the first of this new series were Lillian Bayef, Eddie Marr, Herb Vigran, Sam Edwards, Junius Matthews, and Vic Perrin. Next week at this time, we return with...
Slaughter's the name. Luke Slaughter. When we meet up again, you can call me that. Luke Slaughter.
As you heard, Luke Slaughter. That was episode one, called Duel on the Trail, with an original air date of the 23rd of February, 1958. That aired on CBS, 2:05 in the afternoons. I believe the season only lasted one term, ending in November, if I recollect correctly. Again, if you caught it at the top of the hour, it's considered an adult western, much like Six Shooter, Fort Laramie, Gunsmoke. I'm forgetting Frontier Gentleman. John Danner had a big hand in some of those westerns. Okay, we're going to have fulfill a FCC obligation. Listening to Arthur an hour early this morning on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio. I'm going to cue this one up. We'll have that.
Meeting teen girls online is easy. It's as simple as going into a chat room and starting up conversations. Chatting seems safe to them, so they're much easier to approach than they would be in person. Once we start chatting, I act as cool and understanding as possible. I wait out their suspicions. The longer we talk, the more they trust me. Usually doesn't take all that long. When they send me their picture, I tell them how hot they are. A lot of girls have never had a guy tell them they're beautiful or special or smart, so they eat it up. After I have them convinced we're soulmates and I should be their boyfriend and all that, I ask them to meet in person. The trick is never saying we have to meet. You ask them, make it seem like it's their choice. Once I get them to meet me, well, that's when things get really interesting.
Online predators know what they're doing. Do you?
1 in 5 kids online is sexually solicited. Don't believe the type. Visit cybertipline.com to learn how you can protect yourself from online predators. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
The Grand Hour is brought to you by Acme Incorporated. Acme. If it says Acme, you know it's Acme. And now, back to your regularly scheduled program.
Okay, that was a little creepy PSA. I don't believe I've heard that one. Again, you're listening to Arthur. This isn't quite the Grand Hour. I'm calling this the Kleine Grand Hour. Next, this is something interesting I got off old-time Radio Cat. OTR. CAT.com. This were some demos made for CBS. It's more obscure. I can't find anything regarding when these were made. All I can surmise is they were in the 50s because they were recorded on tape and not done live, as a lot of the radio shows were done in the 30s and early 40s. The narrator was Paul Frees. Again, there was nothing on the air. Encyclopedia of Old Time Radio by John Dunning to indicate that this was a show. It was soliciting a show idea. So it's going to be kind of repetitive. I'm just playing this so anybody listening who listens to the Grand Hour normally can kind of see some of the back projects of old-time radio. It's called Black Book, The Man in Black. Go ahead and play this one for you. Thanks for listening.
And now, the man in black takes from his files another case history of an attempt to commit the perfect crime. Good evening. This is the man in black. A year ago tonight, an innocent man was murdered in a small New England village. He was murdered by Clyde Ross. Listen to what happened in Clyde's own words before he was executed. As I walked across the village square toward the church, I knew I was going to murder old man Hansen, the good sexton, the church bell ringer. Oh, it was going to be so simple and easy. A couple of things left to do first, and that was all. One was to see Father Vincent and tell him how worried I was about Hansen. He was too old to be climbing the tower to ring the bell, that he'd slip someday and have a bad fall down the stairs, that he might even fall out of the belfry. I knew how Father Vincent would react, and he did, just as I expected. I even remember how he said it.
Why, we cannot retire the old man as sexton, my son. Why, next to you, this is his whole life.
And I remember how I told him that, sure, he was so right, but that I loved Hansen like a father and worried about him. Well, I left it at that and went to walk the old sexton home. I lived with him, you see, but he wasn't my father. Oh, no, he was just an old goof whose wife had died 5 years ago and he'd taken me in off the streets. Frankly, I hated the sight of him. But the old man was loaded. He'd saved all kinds of money and no one to leave it to. So I buttered him up for a year or so and got it all fixed legally. I inherited his money when the old man croaked. Yeah. I was going to fix that, too. All I needed was a good simple plan and a witness to say I was somewhere else when it happened. All was easy. First, old Hansen was going to fall out of the church belfry and kill himself. He was going to fall out. Yeah, because I was going to push him. Second, Henry Freckleton was going to be the witness to say I was somewhere else. Henry has a hamburger stand at the edge of town, and for months in advance at the same time every Thursday evening. I'd drive past Henry's and honk and wave at him. He knew I was on my way to Bedford. That's a town about 10 miles away to see a movie. So every Thursday, Henry'd wave me out of town, and a couple hours later, he'd wave me back. So it was established where I went every Thursday night. Clever? But one night, the big night, I didn't go to Bedford. I drove past Henry's, all right, but then I circled back on a little wagon road that led to the woods right behind the church. I hid my car there, and in a few minutes I was silently climbing the narrow steps to the belfry. Old Hansen just begun to pull the bell when he saw me, and he smiled at me. I smiled back happily. Waited till he pulled the bell for the last time, and then I jumped him quick and pushed him over. Just a little push. He fell without a cry. And it seemed right somehow that he landed in the cemetery at the side of the church. Afterwards, I never heard it so quiet. All the way back through the woods to the car, it was as quiet as death. And then I was right on time for Henry's wave when I drove back into town. I knew then the circle was complete. The crime was perfect. Clyde Ross finished his story and said no more. The end is well known. 2 short days later, Clyde was arrested for the murder of the old sexton. Where had he made his mistake? By telling Father Vincent of his concern for the sexton's safety. Because he'd been so convincing, the good father took the problem to the sexton himself. And old Hansen, touched by Clyde's obvious love for him, devised a signal to assure Father Vincent that all was well. He simply rang the church bell 4 extra times to signify that he was not in danger, that Clyde was there.
The Man in Black has brought you from his files another case history of an attempt to commit the perfect crime. This is the CBS Radio Network. And now, The Man in Black takes from his files another case history of an attempt to commit the perfect crime.
As he walked across the village square toward the church, Clyde Ross knew he was going to kill old man Hansen, the good sexton, the church bell ringer. Oh, it was going to be so simple and easy, he thought. There were only a couple of things left to do. The first was to see Father Vincent, to tell him how worried he was about old man Hansen, to tell him that Hansen was too old to be climbing the tower to ring the bell, that he'd slip someday and have a bad fall down the stairs, that he might even fall out of the belfry. Clyde knew how Father Vincent would react to this, and sure enough he did. "We cannot retire the old man as sexton, my son. Where next to you, this is his whole life." Clyde knew that would be the answer and told Father Vincent that he was right. And he carefully added that he loved the old sexton like a father. Although, in fact, of course, Clyde hated him, and Hansen was not his father, but just a lonely old man whose wife had died 5 years ago and who had given Clyde a home. Long since, however, Clyde had discovered that old Hansen had saved his money for years and now had an impressive sum to will to someone. Without much difficulty, Clyde wormed his way into the old man's heart, and now it was all legally arranged that he was going to inherit the money when old Hansen died. But Clyde was impatient, and one day he decided upon a faster way to get the money. All he needed was a good, simple plan, and a witness to say that he was somewhere else when the old man died. He found both easily. First, he decided that old Hansen would fall out of the church belfry and kill himself. And then, to prove that he could not possibly have been present, Clyde settled upon Henry Freckleton as his witness that he was elsewhere when it happened. Henry had a hamburger stand at the edge of town, and for months in advance, at the same time every Thursday night, Clyde would drive past Henry's and honk and wave at him. He let Henry know that he went every Thursday to Bedford, about 10 miles away, to a movie. And on Clyde's return, Henry would wave him back into town. And so it was established where he went each Thursday,
But one night, the big night, Clyde didn't go to Bedford. He drove past Henry's all right, but then he circled back on a little wagon road that led to the woods right behind the church. He hid his car there, and a few minutes later he was silently climbing the narrow steps to the belfry. Old Hansen had just begun to pull the bell when he saw Clyde, and he smiled at him. Clyde smiled back and waited until the sexton had pulled the bell for the last time. Then Clyde picked him up gently and threw him over. The old man fell without a cry, landed in the cemetery at the side of the church, and died instantly. Nobody had heard or seen the accident. Clyde took one brief look below and then hurried back through the woods to his car. Shortly afterwards, Henry Freckleton waved him back into town. The circle was complete. The crime was perfect. And yet, 2 days later, Clyde was arrested for murder. Where had he made his mistake? By telling Father Vincent of his concern for the sexton's safety. Because he'd been so convincing, the good father took the problem to the sexton himself. And old Hansen, touched by Clyde's obvious love for him, devised a signal to assure Father Vincent that all was well. He simply rang the church bell 4 extra times to signify that he was not in danger. That Clyde was there.
The Man in Black has brought you from his files another case history of an attempt to commit the perfect crime. This is the CBS Radio Network. Within the next few minutes, a major crime will be committed somewhere in the United States. Before this program is off the air, a criminal will have struck and vanished, having accomplished a perfect crime. But is it? From his files, The Man in Black brings you another story of a crime that was almost perfect, of a criminal who made only one mistake.
Good evening. This is The Man in Black. A year ago tonight, an innocent man was murdered in a small New England village. He was murdered by Clyde Ross. Listen to what happened in Clyde's own words as he told it to me, just before he was executed. I was going to murder a man, and the whole idea of it felt good. Right then, as I walked across the village square toward the church, I knew I was going to murder him. It was going to be so easy. Simple and easy. A couple of little things left to do, and that was all. Then the church bell started ringing. I looked up at the steeple. Even at night, you could see the belfry clear enough. I could even see the bell banging first one way, then the other. The only thing I couldn't see was him. Edgar Branson. He was the sexton. Big deal. Dig a few graves, keep the old church cemetery looking homey, and ring the bell. That was old man Branson. That was his whole life. That was the guy I was going to kill. Not tonight. Later. A week or so, maybe. I went inside the church, through the vestibule, down the long, dark hall that led to Father Vincent's quarters. When Father Vincent answered my knock, I looked worried. That was part of my plan. Right away, he wanted to know what was wrong, so I told him. I was worried about old Branson. He was too old to be climbing the tower, that maybe he'd slip someday and have a bad fall down the stairs, that he might even fall out of the belfry. Oh, I played it big, like a son being worried about his father. And Father Vincent went right along with it, as I knew he would. I remember just how he said it. We cannot retire old Edgar as sexton, my son. Next to you, this is his whole life. To take it from him now, to say to him his usefulness is gone, would be a grievous wrong, my son. Perhaps a fatal wrong. Yeah, sure. Sure, I told Father Vincent. Sure, he was so right. Boy, both of us were pretty choked up by the time I left. I walked old man Branson home. You see, I live with him. Why not?
I wasn't blessed with a family. Besides, old man Bronson was loaded. Saved all kinds of money and no one to leave it to. His wife had died 5 years ago. After a year or so of me buttering the old boy up, it was all fixed legally. I'd inherit the whole load when the sexton croaked. Let me tell you, I earned it. Brother, how I earned it. Playing nursemaid to an old goof you can't stand the sight of. All the time, acting like he's doing you a big favor, taking you off the streets. You think that's easy? And what's worse, I'd given him something to live for. Everyone said so. Something to live for. Great. And all I ever wanted was to give him something to die for. Old goof. Well, once I knew I was going to kill him, the pressure was off. All I needed was a good plan. A simple one, you know. And a Class A bona fide witness that said I was somewhere else when it happened. A simple plan. Old Branson was going to fall out of the church belfry. He was going to fall out. Yeah. Because I was going to push him. You see, I started the pattern a few months ahead of time. Every Thursday night, I'd drive to Bedford, about 10 miles away, to go to a movie. Got so I was driving past Henry Freckleton's hamburger stand at the edge of town at the same time every Thursday night. Henry'd wave me out of town, and a couple of hours later, I'd honk, and he'd wave me back into town. Henry, Father Vincent, and old man Branson, they all knew where I went every Thursday night. Except that once or twice I didn't go to Bedford at all. Oh, I drove past Henry's all right. A few miles out on the Bedford Road, then I'd circle back on a dinky little wagon road that led to the woods behind the church. I found out I could hide my car there and enter the church belfry unnoticed. After a while, it would be simple to complete the circle and pass Henry's again as I came back into town. Yeah, and it worked, too, like a charm. Not a hitch anywhere. Henry waves me out of town on schedule. I didn't even pass a car on the old wagon road, and the woods were as quiet as a tomb when I went through them. I was silently climbing the narrow, twisting steps to the belfry. Old Branson had just begun to pull the bell when he saw me, and he smiled at me like I was his son. I smiled back. When he pulled the bell for the last time, I moved on him quick and threw him over the side. Fell to his death without a word. It seemed right somehow that he pitched right into the cemetery at the side of the church. Afterwards, I never heard it so quiet. All the way back through the woods to the car, it was as quiet as death. And I was right on time for Henry's wave when I drove back into town, too. I knew then the circle was complete. The crime was perfect.
Clyde Ross finished his story and said no more. The end is well known. 2 short days later, Clyde was arrested for the murder of the old sexton. Where had he made his mistake? What thin web of circumstance became the cord about his neck? As in the case of most perfect crimes, Clyde turned out to be his own hangman. If he had not told Father Vincent of his concern for the sexton's safety, he might well have lived to inherit the old man's wealth. But because he told his story so convincingly, the good father took the problem to the sexton himself. And old Brandon, touched by Clyde's obvious love for him, devised a signal to assure Father Vincent that all was well. He rang the church bell 4 extra times to signify that he was not in danger, that Clyde was there.
The Man in Black has brought you from his files another case history of a criminal who attempted to commit the perfect crime. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Okay, as you heard, well, the narrator there is Paul Frees, F-R-E-E-S, not... Show title is The Black Book, not Paul Frees was known as the Man in Black. The series never got off. I don't know if it was supposed to be interactive. I've kind of insinuated that the listener is supposed to somehow be involved in the program to determine what mistake he made. Kind of like Philco, I've played earlier in the autumn, where that was interactive. I had a book on how Phyllis Cole would solve her 15-minute mysteries. You heard that was on CBS. It was an obscure one. I picked that up from Old Time Radio Cap. I'm going to go ahead and play out the remainder of this hour with Bernard Herrmann. As I featured him, because he was the husband of Lucille Fletcher, who wrote two very memorable radio dramas, The Hitchhiker and Sorry Wrong Number. I always get Sorry Wrong Number confused with Dial M for Murder. But I'll go ahead and play this, because this seems to be a favorite cult movie. Martin Scorsese, Robert De Niro, Taxi Driver. Below me, that was Gomez from the Addams Family by Vic Mizzy. I'm going to go ahead and quit talking now and go play this Taxi Driver suite. This is Arthur on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio.